Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of You're the Cure. I'm Dr. Ben Edwards at Veritas Medical. Excited to be here today with you to talk about lots of different things. I'm sure we'll get into COVID a little bit, but we're also going to talk about the terrain, my favorite topic, the terrain, and Weston A. Price. I don't think I've done an interview or a presentation in the last 6 months that I haven't mentioned Weston A. Price, and we're going to talk about him a lot today. Because I've got a special guest, a repeat guest, Sally Fallon Morell is on with us today. We've had her on before. It's been a couple, 3 years maybe, but I thought it'd be a great time to bring Sally back on the show. Welcome, Sally. Thank you for joining us today.
Oh, thank you, Ben. It's great to be here.
And for those who are new to the show or are new to eating real food and considering your terrain instead of just the germ, a little background on Sally Fallon Morell. She's a president of the Weston A. Price Foundation. We're going to talk about the Wise Traditions Conference that's coming up. But Sally is the president of Weston A. Price Foundation. You can find that at westonaprice.org. She's also an author, best-selling cookbook, Nourishing Traditions. We refer to that all the time. And just really a pioneer and an advocate for eating real food, eating ancestral food in particular, finding and creating, making food for your family like our ancestors used to do back when we were healthy. And what I try to pound home into people's minds, and I was just interviewed earlier by another podcaster this morning, and we just spent a whole lot of time trying to convince her audience that it's not about the gene and it's not about the germ. And a hundred years ago is when all this started really shifting and changing, when our food started changing mostly, as well as some environmental toxins and stressors. But all this modern disease, diabetes, yeah, cancer, heart disease, Alzheimer's, autoimmune diseases, 54% of our kids now have a chronic disease. All this disease is new over the past 100 years. The first heart attack ever recorded in the American literature, Dr. Chris Kenobi has educated us on this, was in 1912 when there was one heart attack in the entire country recorded in the literature. And now there's 650,000 deaths from heart disease, the number one killer. All of this is brand new. So
you talk about genes and germs. I often say we blame disease on the three G's: germs, genes, and God.
Yeah.
And what that's saying is it's somebody else's fault. We even blame it on God. It's God's will. But it's up to us. You know, we are the ones who determine how we eat, what kind of environment we have, whether we have a clean and toxin-free environment. And we need to kind of get off God's lap and be adults now, yeah, and take responsibility for our health.
Yeah, I agree 100%. It's all about stewardship. There's lack of knowledge and there's lack of stewardship. So let's gain the knowledge and then let's start to make the decisions to change our habits. Say no to some stuff. Are you going to look a little different than your neighbor? You might, but that's good. Get your neighbor to come look like you, because the things we're talking about are going to reduce your risk of ending up in the ICU with COVID or any other disease too. And before we get into that, Sally.
Or your children. I think that's even more important. A lot of people say, well, I don't care about myself. But when you realize how important a good diet is for your children and their growth and their behavior, their intelligence, and their happiness.
Yeah, exactly.
Then it looks a little different.
100% agree. Sally, give a brief background for new listeners who don't, maybe has never heard of Nourishing Traditions and Weston A. Price and the Wise Traditions Conference. Give a little background on how you got to do what you're doing now.
In two sentences. So Weston Price was a dentist who wrote this wonderful book, Nutrition and Physical Degeneration, back in the 1940s, and he pointed out that it was diet that caused the degeneration of the healthy traditional people, the change from their nutrient-dense diet, which included foods that we're being told we shouldn't eat, like animal fats, organ meats, butter, eggs, fish eggs, fatty fish, cod liver oil, included these kinds of foods. And when they transitioned to what he called the displacing foods of modern commerce, based on sugar, vegetable oils, white flour, etc., they all went through the same pattern. The adults began to suffer from terrible tooth decay that caused a lot of suffering. But in the next generation, the children looked different. They had more narrow faces. They had crowded and crooked teeth, whereas their parents did not. And they were not as robust. They were much more prone to diseases like TB, and childbirth became very painful and life-threatening. So there was a physical degeneration, and it got worse with each generation. And I often say we're at the 11th hour now. As you have pointed out, one out of two children has a serious problem of some sort, and we can't go much longer without making some changes. Yeah. So in 19, I wrote Nourishing Traditions as a cookbook that would put Dr. Price's findings into popular form. And then in 1999, I myself, my husband, Mary Enig, and Tom Cowan, we founded the Weston A. Price Foundation to provide ongoing information to people and also to help people find the foods that we're talking about. We run a campaign for real milk, which helps people find raw milk. We have local chapters that help you find the good pasture-raised local food. And so we are coming up on our 21st conference, Wise Traditions 2021, and it will be in Allen, Texas, so I'm sure we'll see you there. Yeah. And it's November 5th through 7th, and I guess we're going to talk about that in detail, but let me just say that the website for the conference is wisetraditions.org, and we have a range of costs and ways you can attend the conference. If you just want to come hear my main seminar for healthy traditional diets on Saturday, that's one fee. And then if you want to be at the whole conference or just one day, so we have a variety of payment choices and ways that you can come to the conference.
And I would highly encourage people to look into attending this conference. It's one of the best conferences I've been to. And it's not just purely medical. Obviously, it's family oriented. There's kids, but the food's amazing. The vendors are amazing. And the information's amazing. A wide variety of speakers. And we will get into that lineup and what some of the topics are going to be. But Sally,
we like to call it a party because everyone has so much fun at this conference.
Yep, absolutely.
And if you're new to this and feel a little bit overwhelmed or a little alone, I would highly recommend you come and meet like-minded people and learn really practical things you can do, or you can come to the more scientific talks. We have a range of levels and subjects on the talks.
Yeah, that's a great point. People can feel overwhelmed and alone and just don't know where to start and what's good and what's not good. They've been bombarded with information, disinformation on the foods.
Yeah.
And you tell someone to start eating fat again, they can look at you like you're crazy. Yeah.
And the other, of course, we will have a big focus on COVID this time. I'm going to be giving a talk called The Contagion Myth, about just disease in general. But we have Andy Kaufman, who's been very outspoken about how this is not caused by a virus. And we have Larry Pilevsky, who's talking about the dangers of the vaccines. So, and several people talking about the legal and political repercussions of what's going on today.
Yeah, it's going to be a wide-ranging, fascinating conference. And I think it's a good time to remind people, you know, Weston Price, he traveled the world, 14 different people groups all over the world. So from, you know, Native Americans up in Canada and Alaska down to South Pacific Islanders, to the Amazon rainforest, to Peru and Africa and the Swiss Alps. The point being lots of different genetic groups and ethnic groups and people groups, and they were all eating different things, obviously. You know, in Africa, they're not eating what the South Pacific Islanders were eating. So, you know, Sally, you've been, and the diet, we'll call it a diet, an eating plan, just an ancestral eating plan. We hear about, you know, keto and paleo and vegan and all these different kind of fads will kind of come and go, or some will stay, but there's all these different things. So how would you describe to someone who's kind of new and they've maybe heard keto thrown around out there, paleo thrown around? What's different?
we call it the Wise Traditions Diet, and it has 11 principles, which this is what I do on Saturday, my seminar on nourishing traditional diets. And the point is, if you learn these principles, you can incorporate them into a diet that contains the foods that you like, the foods that you can afford, foods you have time to prepare, and most importantly, foods that your children will actually eat. And surprisingly, this diet doesn't look much different from a good old-fashioned diet that our parents served up, or our grandparents. It includes meat, especially meat with the fat. It includes chicken with the skin. It includes seafood. It includes raw dairy foods, plenty of butter and eggs. You can have eggs and bacon for breakfast on this diet. And some new things, such as the incorporation of fermented foods like sauerkraut for digestive health, and bone broth for soups and stews and sauces. Plenty of salt in this diet. It's actually a delicious diet. It's just a diet of real food, including the fats.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I can attest to not only eating this way daily at home, but at the conference, you'll eat this way too. Is that kind of food?
Yes, that's right. We pride ourselves, the full conference fee includes 5 delicious meals that all incorporate our principles, and you get an idea of what this kind of eating looks like. And it's really delicious. I mean, the hotels are always amazed at how much food people eat. Right. One thing I forgot to mention is that in traditional diets, they were very careful about the way they prepared their grains, because grains can be very toxic unless they're prepared properly by soaking, sprouting, or especially sourdough. And we always serve sourdough bread with plenty of butter to show you that you can include grains in your diet. They just need to be properly prepared.
Right, as our ancestors did. Our ancestors right. didn't have all this food allergy, food sensitivity, gluten sensitivity.
And not these problems with gluten and grains and everything. And that's because everything we do in the modern diet, it makes our food hard to digest. Yep. And we need to be kind to our digestion and prepare these foods, kind of pre-digest them before we eat them.
Yeah. Yeah, I like to tell people the problem with processed food is it can sit on the shelf forever. And well, yeah. The problem with that is it can just sit in your gut forever. It's hard to break it down. It's hard to digest
absolutely.
It. And all the nutrients really are found in the part that goes bad, the part they have to take out, or it will spoil on the shelf. And that's what we're reacting to, is this processed food-like substances. It's not even real food.
Yeah, that's right. And it's extremely hard to digest, as you say. And you know, at least 30% of our energy goes into digestion. And anything we can do to make our foods easier to digest is going to give us more energy.
Yep. Well, I want to circle back to Weston Price when he left his dental practice in Cleveland because he was noticing this uptick in disease in America, in Cleveland, Ohio in particular. This chronic disease, arthritis and heart disease and malignancies and things like that. So he really went to study healthy groups because of this chronic disease. But what he noticed in his travels, not only did chronic disease come from modern foods, but the tuberculosis, and you mentioned that briefly, TB. So when it comes to germs, which is obviously a hot topic right now, infections, germs, COVID, germ theory versus the terrain theory, Let's talk about that a little bit.
A TB is a really good one to look at, because TB is our number one killer, still kills 3,000 people per day. And we're not going to solve this problem until we know what the cause is. Now, it's blamed on the TB bacillus, but Robert Koch, one of the fathers of the germ theory, was never able to make an animal or a human sick by exposing their lungs and their breathing to what he thought was this bacillus, which, by the way, he had a very hard time finding. And even today, apparently 9 out of 10 people who test so-called positive to this thing, this bacillus, are what they call latent. In other words, they're not sick and they don't make people sick. So we need to look elsewhere, and Dr. Price had some really interesting things to say about TB. So he was very concerned about the development of the face, and that he noted that the traditional people had these broad faces, naturally straight teeth, And he felt that when the diet changed and the faces became more narrow in the next generation, it affected the lungs as well. And the lungs were not as well formed in the next generation. And that's when the TB appeared. And it wasn't because they were living in dirty environments or anything like that. In fact, the traditional people lived in smoke-filled teepees and cottages. They were exposed to smoke almost all the time, and yet they didn't have lung disease, they didn't have TB. Now, in the early days, they treated TB fairly successfully with cod liver oil, raw milk, and sunlight. And that's what we need to get back to, is treating TB with foods and substances that help people recover. But long-term, it has to be the diet of the parents so that the lungs are formed properly in the next generation.
Right. Yep. And I want to remind folks also, at the turn of the century, back in, you know, the late 1800s, early 1900s, when you look at infant mortality rates for all kinds of different things, from whooping cough to measles to diphtheria and typhoid, yeah, and different things, it was significant in the big cities, you know, New York, Boston, Manchester, yeah, London, these big cities. It was like a 50% mortality rate. Half the kids didn't make it to their fifth birthday until, yeah, they figured out we need to clean up the external environment, sanitation, water.
Absolutely. It was the very unglamorous work of putting sewers in, cleaning up the water. I mean, the cities were absolute cesspools in the 1800s. There was no sanitation. There were piles of horse manure everywhere because people used horses and not cars. There was also a lot of electrical pollution. When you look at the old pictures of the cities, late 1800s, there were just electrical wires everywhere. And those eventually got put underground. So it took a while. You know, it wasn't until the late 1800s that the water for the city of Chicago, they started taking it out of the lake in a different place from where they were dumping the sewage. So up until late 1800s, they were taking the water from the lake in the same place they were dumping the sewage. So all of these things contributed to disease, and it was only by cleaning things up that these diseases disappeared. It wasn't due to vaccinations. In fact, most of these diseases had declined steeply before the vaccinations came, and typhoid fever cleared up without any vaccinations. So it's not the vaccinations that are doing this. It's cleaning up the environment.
Yep. I agree 100%. And when people see the visual...
And by the way, getting rid of the horse. I know that cars are polluting, and they brought another problem in, but we were able to solve that problem by reformulating gasoline. Gasoline is not polluting anymore. And the smog is pretty much cleared up in all American cities. So we know how to do things. We can figure out how to do things. Our next big challenge is, what are we going to do about electrical, you know, Wi-Fi and EMF pollution, especially the pollution from 5G? But I'm sure we'll figure it out at some point. It might take a couple hundred years, but we'll figure something out.
Yeah. And I do want to get into that part of our terrain disruptor. And just want to drive home that point, finish that point on these childhood illnesses. There was a 99% drop in mortality prior to the vaccine coming into the picture in the 1950s. So that was so much of the external terrain. But today, modern times, even more modern than what Dr. Price was calling modern, it's our internal terrain, our cellular environment, right. Our cellular water is so toxic, so disrupted. Our mitochondria, that's your carburetor in the cell, it can't make energy. It can't clear the exhaust. It's blowing out black smoke, free radicals, oxidative stress, inflammation.
Yep, yep.
We've got an internal cellular environment that's as dirty as New York City was in 1899. It is so toxic internally. And that's where there's not a pill, there's not a shot, there's not anything, yeah, from a pharmaceutical company that's going to clean up that cellular debris and smog.
You've got to stop using the toxic gasoline, which, of course, is the vegetable oils.
Yep.
They are so toxic. And the worst thing that's happened in the last 100 years is the substitution of vegetable oils for healthy animal fats. And, you know, Ben, I just read this study. I'd kind of forgotten about it, but one of the vitamins that is really important for mitochondrial production of energy is vitamin A,
right,
which people don't get in the low-fat diet or the vegetable oil diet. Vitamin A is in animal fats.
Yeah.
It's in egg yolks. It's in butter. It's in cod liver oil. It's in liver. It's in the foods we used to eat that dietitians today are telling us not to eat.
Yeah. And I want to remind folks who want to say, well, beta-carotene's fine.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
in vegetables, but it takes a whole lot of beta-carotene to convert into the retinol, which is your vitamin A from
and
an animal.
Half the people can't do it at all.
Yeah.
And if you eat too many carotenes, the whole mechanism shuts down anyway.
Right.
You really need the animal fats to get your vitamin A.
Yeah. And vitamin A is very important for lots of things, but from an antiviral standpoint, it helps keep that cell nice and sturdy to help prevent
yes.
the viral replication.
Yes, exactly.
Sorry. Can you speak to a little bit on the vegetable oil thing? I know Dr. Chris Canobi, he's been on the show a couple years ago. I know he's spoken at your conference before, but talk to the listeners about traditional fats like olive oil that's from a seed, from an olive seed,
yeah.
but versus these tiny hard seeds like a rape seed, canola oil.
Yeah, right.
Talk about that.
Well, Chris is actually going to speak at the conference. His talk is called Omega-6 Apocalypse. I just love that title.
That's awesome.
So what's in vegetable oils? So vegetable oils come from seeds. They were not in the diet before 1900. The only way to get these oils out of the seeds is with a very high heat, high chemical process. The oils have been heated 5 times before they get in the bottle, and then we're told to cook with them or fry with them. And these oils are polyunsaturates, which means they're very fragile, and they break down into what we call free radicals and aldehydes and substances that are just extremely toxic. Whereas the animal fats are mostly saturated or monounsaturated. They're very stable. They don't require the repeated applications of high heat to get them, to loosen them up. They're already there for us. And they are actually stable under heat. And they also carry very important vitamins for us and also very important types of fats. One of the ones I like to talk about is called arachidonic acid. We only can get that from animal fats. It's not in fish oils. It's not in olive oil. It's not in certainly not in vegetable oils. And arachidonic acid is we don't need much of it, but we definitely need to get it in the diet. And it's very important for digestion because it creates tight cell-to-cell junctures in the digestive tract. It's very important for healthy skin. And also for all kinds of signaling and hormone production and everything. And really, and the other thing about arachidonic acid, it is the precursor in the body to natural cannabinoids, feel-good chemicals. And I believe that the reason we see so much addiction today is that people are not getting what they need to produce these things internally and naturally because they're not eating animal fats. So this is a huge theme for us that we need to get over our fear and guilt about animal fats, get them back in the diet so we feel good and so we produce healthy children, and just absolutely avoid the toxic vegetable oils like the plague.
Amen. The American College of Cardiology came out, this was August of 2020, with a review article, and they reviewed all the saturated fat literature over the past many years. I think it was 20 years. And their conclusion was, it's not the saturated fat in the steak and the dark chocolate and the heavy whipping cream and all that. It's the processing of said foods by man's ingenious processing
techniques.
And also,
there was a big article, American Journal of Clinical Nutrition, a few years ago, which came to the same conclusion. In fact, they found that the people who were eating saturated fats had less heart disease, less stroke, less cancer. And you would think that something so important would be reported on in the newspapers, on the television. Not a word, not a single word. And the dietitians and the doctors and the government are still giving out this completely genocidal advice to avoid saturated fats.
Yeah, it's a travesty. And all the while, the American Heart Association is raking in the dough to sell the heart healthy stamp that they put on these vegetable oils. It's an
And also, you know, the American Heart Association was founded, was created to promote the diet heart theory, which was that saturated fats and cholesterol cause heart disease. They were supported by the vegetable oil industry from the very beginning. They are a marketing arm of the vegetable oil industry.
Yeah. And I mean, when I have to tell a patient specifically, look for the heart healthy stamp and then avoid that.
Yes,
don't
exactly.
Get that. Cottonseed in particular, we're in the middle of cotton country. Their cotton crops are bountiful this year. But just can you describe for people the cottonseed oil processing that originally when they started to make the Crisco and just how nasty that
was? Right, right. Well, first of all, the thing about cottonseed is it's just loaded with pesticides and chemicals, and they're still in the oil. But Procter & Gamble developed this process called partial hydrogenation to turn the liquid cottonseed oil into a hard fat for candles. And then electricity came along, and there was no market for candles. So they said, now what are we going to do with all this cottonseed oil? And they said, oh, let's sell it to people. And they came out with something called Crisco, and the marketing campaign for Crisco started in 1913 with a cookbook called The Story of Crisco, which is full of pseudoscience gobbledygook and recipes where there, for example, one is for lobster bisque that contains a cup of Crisco. Well, this is fat is produced by a process called partial hydrogenation, which involves actually changing the structure of the fat molecule into something called a trans fat. It involves a lot of heat, pressure, and chemicals. And the trans fats, we now know, are extremely toxic, even at low levels in the diet. And the industry has actually pretty much gotten rid of these trans fats. I don't know about Crisco but or margarine, but in other foods. But they've done it what they've done is take the vegetable oils and create saturated fats. There's actually a lot more saturated fat in our food than there used to be from the vegetable oils. But again, it's done with high heat and lots of chemicals and so forth. And so begs the question, why not just eat butter? You know, why not just fry in lard? And lard, by the way, is a rich source of arachidonic acid, and it contains a lot of vitamin D. And we've just learned lard is a really great source of vitamin K. So
that's awesome.
Cooking lard the way we used to.
Yeah, lard, tallow, the traditional fats.
Yeah.
And I just want to remind the audience, guys, going back to COVID, which we're going to have to take a break here. And when we come back, we can talk more about COVID. But I think most people understand inflammation is a huge problem for chronic disease, but also in COVID, these patients end up in the hospital. There's massive inflammation, and then there's massive blood clotting. And
the problems with the lungs, breathing.
The point I want to drive home for the audience is this inflammatory process is actually inflammation's good. We need it to a degree. That's how we kill germs. That's how we kill these bugs. And that's how we clean up damaged tissue. You get a bruise or you cut your finger or whatever. There's dead, damaged cells. We've got to basically burn them up and clean them out. So inflammation's there to kill these bugs, clean up damaged tissue. But we need to be able to rein in the inflammation. We need to be able to control that burn. We need to be able to turn it down and turn it all the way off when the process is done. And so there's this anti-inflammatory part of the equation that's got to turn on and bring all its nice antioxidant, anti-inflammatory effects. So there's this beautiful balance between the two. And when you're chronically, when you're chronically inflamed, I was just going to say it real quick. So chronically inflamed, then you get a germ in and you get in this massive inflammatory cascade and you can't turn it off, can't rein it in because the body's full of all these embers. Vegetable oil, Crisco, sugar, all the processed food is like a gas on the fire kind of deal. We turn into this massive inflammatory process. Just wanted to make that point clear, but go ahead, Sally.
Yeah. And you know, the powers that be are always accusing butter and saturated fats of being inflammatory, and nothing could be further from the truth.
Yeah. I think pretty much, unfortunately, we're at a place where any health agency now that says anything, unfortunately, it's almost like do the opposite.
I mean, run the other way.
Yeah. Okay, we got to do a quick break, Sally. What's that website one more time for people to find you and find the conference?
It's wisetraditions.org, wisetraditions.org.
All right, I encourage everybody to go check that out. And also westonaprice.org is a website. You can find more of tons of resources on there, lots of articles. There's the cookbook, Nourishing Traditions, and all that. So
yeah,
you'll check
and,
that
and
out.
And the conference is in Texas. It's in Allen, Texas, near the Dallas-Fort Worth Airport.
Yep. Same place it was in 2019, I believe. Isn't it?
Yes. Yep. Yes.
Awesome. I highly recommend it. It was a great conference 2 years ago in Allen, Texas. Great facility. Strongly recommend y'all look into going to as much of that as you can. All right. I'm Ben Edwards. You're the Cure. We'll be right back. Okay, we are back. I'm Ben Edwards. VeritasMedical.com is where we will archive this show and all our other shows. Also, you can find us on a podcast on iTunes at You're the Cure. We also upload these to Rumble now. We used to do YouTube, but we can't talk on YouTube anymore because they don't allow the truth on there. So you can check that out on Rumble. And we are visiting today with Sally Fallon Morrell. She is the president of the Weston A. Price Foundation, westonaprice.org, and the conference they put on every year, Wise Traditions, the Wise Traditions Conference, talking about the Wise Traditions diet. And you can go to wisetraditions.org and check out all the great lineup of speakers. And also, you can purchase previous conferences, can't you, on there,
yes,
Sally?
Yes. And yes, right. And if you can't come, I strongly suggest you do come because it's a wonderful experience. But if you can't come, we will be live streaming one track every day.
Awesome.
And then you can buy all of the talks after the conference.
Yeah. And it looks like there's just so many great speakers. A lot of these actually we've interviewed.
You know, I don't think we've ever had such a lineup of real superstars.
Yeah.
Starting with Robert F. Kennedy Jr. He will be giving the keynote address at the banquet. And Dale Bigtree will be speaking at the closing ceremony. So these are two stars, people I highly admire for the stand that they've taken.
Yeah,
another point of the conference is that on Saturday, it's the only time of the year I do it. I do my all-day seminar on Wise Traditions diets, which goes into the principles and then practical steps, what you can do to change your diet for the better, because it is kind of overwhelming for a lot of people. We have a couple of talks on getting started, making bone broth, cooking with organ meats. We have David Brownstein, who has been treating COVID very successfully with basically some home remedies. Lisa Williams talking about aluminum in the diet and how to avoid it, how to get rid of it. We have a lovely homeopathic physician who will be talking about homeopathics for COVID. Andrew Kaufman, who has been beating the drum saying this is not caused by a virus. There's absolutely no proof that this disease is caused by a virus. They've never found this virus. And then I will be talking about the contagion myth and describing to you what is causing COVID, because I don't dismiss it as just a kind of flu. It's not the flu. It's more serious than the flu, but it's also highly treatable.
Right. And I can attest to that. We've treated hundreds, and I'm in daily communication with physicians around the country that it all told, if well, they're into the hundreds of thousands of patients now treated, consider these guys to be kind of experts of keeping people out of the ICU. So definitely.
Yeah, you got to stay
treatable
out of the hospital. They get more money if they put you on an incubator, what do they call it? They intubate you on a respirator, not an incubator.
Yeah.
And they get like $36,000 if they put you on the respirator. And that's what kills people, and partially because of the drugs they give you to put you on the respirator.
Yeah.
So you need to not go to the hospital with whatever happens.
I agree 100%. We had Dr. Brian Artis on a couple weeks ago, and he talked about remdesivir. We had.
And that's killing people too. Yeah.
Yeah. It's awful. Avoid the hospital at all costs, no doubt. I daily get emails from, I just had one before I jumped on to record this show, from a person, a loved one's in the hospital. They can't get the protocols. They can't get the drugs, like just basic inhaled steroids and ivermectin and the things that have been proven to work. So it's a travesty.
Or hydroxychloroquine, which is just quinine.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I recommend is quinine water all the time, just as your little quinine cocktail in the evening, and as a prophylactic to protect you. By the way, there are two speakers at the conference whom a little bit different. They're physicists with some sort of anti-establishment messages. One is James DeMayo, a man I really admire, who wrote a book on the ether. And, you know, we're not supposed to have an ether. That was disproven by the Michelson-Morley experiments, but it actually wasn't. And that makes things look very different when we talk about how our universe works. And the other is Gerald Pollack, who's done fantastic work on water and structured water and what the structured water does in our body. And I'll just give you one thing that he told me, which I was able to put in the book. When they have a tank, and you can see the structured water against the hydrophilic surface, and that structured water carries a charge. And in our cells, the structured water against the cell membranes is our electrical system. Those are our wires. And when you put a router, a computer router, next to the tank with the water, that structured water area shrinks by 15%. So all of this Wi-Fi and 5G and everything we have in our houses for wireless communication, it is definitely affecting the most fundamental part of our bodies, which is water.
Yeah.
The structure of the water.
Yeah. And we are 99% water by molecule, 70% by weight. We're a bag of water.
We're a bag of water. But it's different kind of water. It's structured water. And it has to be structured in a certain way for our cells to work right. And basically what the EMF does is affect how our water is structured in our body.
Right. Well, let's talk.
That's why I say we need to clean up. Just like we put plumbing in our houses and, you know, got rid of the outhouse and stuff. Just like we got rid of the bugs in our houses with screens and vacuum cleaners. We now need to get rid of the Wi-Fi in our houses, and it's not hard to do. You can get everything wired inside your house. You can certainly turn off your router at night and don't have your cell phone in your bedroom. I mean, there's just really simple things you can do to minimize your exposure to this really toxic influence that we're getting today.
Yeah. And I'd encourage listeners to go back on our archives, and you'll find some shows we've done on EMF with some experts about how to clean up your EMF toxic exposure.
And you know, Ben, this isn't new. The ancient peoples were much more sensitive, and they knew there were certain places where you shouldn't live or sleep because there were underground currents of water or metals or whatever. They were called ley lines or fairy tracks. And you did not put your house there. You didn't put your bed there because of the magnetic fields that were produced. So it's not something, even this is not something new. It's something that the ancient people realized was a problem, and you just avoided it.
Well, let's, because all this has to do with the terrain, you know, and then we said in the early 1900s, it was more the sewage, clean water, sanitation type stuff.
Yeah.
Now it's our internal terrain. And so this whole debate on viruses and germ theory versus terrain theory, and I know you and Tom Kellen wrote a book. We've had Tom on a number of times on our show, Contagion Myth. Let's talk about that a little bit and tell us what you discovered in your research for that book and what that book, what information comes in that book.
Right. So we wrote The Contagion Myth. It was published last year. It's actually done very well. Andy Kaufman, who's going to be at the conference, will address the first premise of the book, that there's no virus, that this disease is not caused by a virus. They've never isolated this virus. And the part that I did was about all of these diseases considered contagious Many of them are not considered contagious anymore, but the germ theory, the premise of the germ theory is that every disease is caused by a specific germ, and only that germ causes that disease. And that was every, I mean, Pasteur and Robert Koch, they both said this, every disease. Now that's in the late 1800s. Well, since that time, we have disproven that for a number of diseases. The first one was scurvy, which was considered an infectious disease that broke out among sailors, and they passed it from one to another. And now we know that it's caused by a nutrient deficiency. Same with pellagra, that was considered contagious. One of the ones I really enjoy pointing out is smallpox, which was considered highly contagious. And there was a wonderful doctor in San Antonio, Texas, who had a clinic there. And he showed that the disease was not contagious, that you couldn't catch it from somebody else, but that it was spread by the toxic bite of bed bugs, and especially in people who were low in vitamin C. And he completely eliminated smallpox from his clinic by getting rid of bed bugs, and sometimes he made people sleep in hammocks to get them away from the bed bugs. And he also made them eat fruits and vegetables so they got their vitamin C. He also did not believe in immunity. He said he had seen people get smallpox and recover. They weren't immune. If they got bitten by a bed bug, they'd get it again. Now, smallpox has completely disappeared in the Western world. You still find it in, undeveloped countries. And that's because we don't have bed bugs anymore. We have clean houses. We have window screens. We have vacuum cleaners. We don't have bed bugs, and so we don't have smallpox.
Wow. Well, that reminds me of, I was reading, maybe it was one of Tom's books, maybe it's a contagion myth, but 1918, the Spanish flu of 1918, and multiple different experiments taking the excretions, the snot, out of sick people, yeah, and having other, I think it was some military folks, sailors or army men were volunteered to consume this snot, and they didn't get sick. Can you talk about that?
They breathed on the sick people, breathed on the well people. They even exposed sick horses to well people, and there was not one example of somebody getting sick from exposure to sick people. It was not a contagious disease. And yet it broke out all over the world, all at the same time, killed 50 million people. So what was it? And Arthur Furstenberg, in his book Invisible Rainbow, which everyone should read that book, makes the case that this was the rollout of radio waves and radio towers, which was pretty much worldwide all at the same time, starting on military bases, and people got sick from this. Now, most people in the homeopathic hospitals, and people with, a minimal medical treatment recovered. But the medical treatment was to give high doses of aspirin, which made people kind of bleed to death. And I mean, they were giving tons of aspirin to these people. Also, people in the military had been heavily vaccinated over the years in the military, and they were very vulnerable. Mm-hmm. The point I'd like to make is that most people recovered and actually adjusted to the radio waves. We don't consider exposure to radio waves to cause sickness today because we're used to it. And I do think we kind of adjust, to the EMF. I have a physician friend in Italy who believes that when we're sick with COVID, we actually sprout new receptors on ourselves. To make us, I won't say immune, but more resistant to this influence.
Fascinating. Well, the body, people forget the body's really an electrical being.
The body is electrical, and we have ways of dealing, I guess, so you might say. We've figured out how to deal with radio waves. We have ways of dealing with magnetic fields. And I'm sure that we can at least partially adjust to the EMF, but at the same time, we want to be careful and not overexpose
right.
ourselves or our children.
Yeah. And what I preach so often is, and I don't want this to come across wrong to the audience, we can't completely remove ourselves from the world, from society. We're in a toxic world.
Exactly.
There's just no way. You do what you can. You be smart about it. Like Sally said, anyone can go unplug their Wi-Fi at night when you're asleep. You don't need that.
Yeah.
But it's about building resiliency, equipping your body to be able to take some hits, recover, adjust. This resiliency really is found so much in these nutrient-dense foods. And we keep going back to the same thing, but that's the truth. You got to get back to the basics of filling your body with nutrition.
I'll give you a very interesting example, which I just stumbled upon. So one of the big problems in the 1800s was exposure to arsenic. It was in the water. It was, people put it in their food. But also the main source of arsenic was wallpaper, because the wallpaper had these arsenic colors, and the wallpaper outgassed and arsenic fumes. And this wasn't something trivial. I mean, they were producing millions of rolls of wallpaper a year in England and the United States, and almost everybody had wallpaper in their houses. That's what you did. You put wallpaper on your wall. So everyone was exposed to arsenic, but only a few people got sick. And that's why it took them so long to figure out what was causing this, because they said, well, most of the people live with this wallpaper and they're fine. And it turns out that one of the biggest protections against arsenic is vitamin B12. And where do we get B12? We get it from nutrient-dense animal foods. We get it from liver. We get it from seafood. So people trying to be vegetarians and vegans are going to be much more vulnerable to these types of poisons.
Yep. And I want to remind everybody to absorb the B12 and pretty much all your nutrients, but really the B12, you have to have intrinsic factor, and that's related to your stomach acid. And stomach acid production is absolutely key for absorption of B12, absorption of a lot of the minerals. And stomach acid production is compromised by chronic stress, fight or flight mode. When you're in that fight or flight mode, it will turn down your stomach acid production.
Yes, because your stomach just tightens up. But also the low salt diet, because you make stomach acid with hydrochloric acid, with chloride, and our only source of chloride, except for maybe celery, is salt. And when you go on a low salt or no salt diet, you cannot produce hydrochloric acid anymore.
Yeah. And for those, we may not have time to get into it deeply, but there's a couple books, The Salt Fix and Salt Your Way to Health. I think Dr. Brownstein's actually wrote The Salt Your Way to Health.
Yeah.
So those are two great resources people could look at. Yeah. Traditionally, people have fought wars over salt. I mean, it was a highly traded commodity, highly valued commodity.
Yeah. And traditionally, people ate a lot more salt than we do today. We get about a teaspoon and a half a day, which is what we need to satisfy our requirements for sodium and chloride. But back in 1900, people were eating 3 teaspoons a day. Our diets were much saltier.
Yeah. So we've been told to eat vegetable oil, and now we're telling you not to. We've been told to eat low salt or no salt, and we're asking you to eat salt to be healthy. So you can start to see the dichotomy here. But let's talk about sweeteners, because sugar is prevalent. High fructose corn syrup, all the processed sugars. It's just an...
And the artificial sweeteners.
Yeah. So let's touch on that from an ancestral standpoint, and how often and that kind of thing, and where are the best sources of a sweetener, and do you even need them, or can you get excess of those, and speak about sweeteners a little bit.
Well, you know, it's a highly individual thing, I think, but traditional people did have some sweeteners. They had honey, maple syrup, they had coconut sugar. So there were some sweeteners. They were rare. I mean, you didn't have a lot of them. And so eating sweet things was didn't happen very often. And I like to say, you know, we have a sweet tooth in our mouth. It's there for a reason. So I, in the Wise Traditions diet, we do allow some naturally sweetened desserts, which you can taste at our conference. My personal theory is that sweeteners should come from the sweet desserts, or moderately sweet desserts, should be given to children by their parents. They should be made by the parents. It's something the children deserve, you know, dessert. And it shouldn't come from the outside. It should be something they associate with their family life.
Yeah, I agree. That's hard to do these days, guys, I understand. But
but
there are a lot of hard things we got to do, especially when it comes to our kids and raising our kids.
You know, it's not as hard as having a sick child or being sick yourself.
Yep, that's right. Sally, we've got about 7-8 minutes left. I want to touch on raw milk, because two reasons. Number one, it's so nutritious. And number Two, there's two great raw milk dairies here locally in the Lubbock area, one in Abernathy and one down by O'Donnell. And so we have access to it. But it's also the fear factor comes in. Again, our government health agencies back in the day scared everybody. Raw milk is going to kill you. So can you spend a few minutes talking about the health benefits and maybe the history and the truth about raw milk?
Okay, so we founded a campaign for real milk in 1999. We set up a website, realmilk.com. And at that time, there were probably 20 sources of raw milk in the whole country. And now there's well over 2,000. Raw milk is highly available. People are, at least 10 million Americans drink raw milk. That's probably more like 20 million. And nobody's getting sick from this milk. We've had 2 years now where we've had no reports of illness from this milk. And there have been no deaths from raw milk for 50 years, where there have been deaths from pasteurized milk. So they just got it all wrong about the raw milk, that it because it has wonderful factors in it that kill pathogens and enhance the immune system, help build a healthy gut wall. Now, Ben, I would never recommend raw milk from an industrial confinement dairy because these protective systems can be overwhelmed. But raw milk from pastured cows produced with normal sanitation is a highly nutritious and very safe food. One of the things in raw milk is glutathione. It's not in cheese. It's in the liquid part of the milk, and glutathione is our protection in a toxic world. It's highly protective against COVID. And once you pasteurize or powder the milk, make a whey powder or whatever, that glutathione is denatured and it doesn't work. There's raw milk has every single vitamin and mineral in raw milk has a special enzyme to ensure that it's 100% absorbed. No other food is like this. And once you pasteurize, those enzymes are destroyed. So raw milk is just such a wonderful food for a growing child. And we have taken our technology. We have the technology to get clean raw milk to every person in this country. And instead, we've taken our technology and ruined nature's perfect food by processing and pasteurizing it.
Yeah. Well, we have a very bad track record for taking natural food and doing things to it.
Yeah.
And when you really look at it, the things we do to it are for the benefit of the producer and not just not necessarily
for a longer shelf life.
Exactly.
Yes.
And it's more the middleman than the actual producer, but it's a profit motive, not a health motive. And when things can sit around on a shelf for a long period of time, like I said, they can, they're not nutrient
dense. You know,
the first
laws requiring pasteurization were passed in New York, like about 1920. And the committee that passed the laws, they all recognized that raw milk was superior. They all recognized that it was safe if it was produced in clean conditions. But the reason they passed the pasteurization laws was to make it easier to inspect. They said, we don't have the manpower to inspect all these dairies, but if we go to the pasteurizing plant, we can afford to inspect. And that is exactly what my health inspector said to me on our farm. She said, Sally, we do not have the manpower to go out and inspect all these little dairies. So the reason they want it is to make the milk easier to inspect. It has nothing to do with health at all.
Imagine that. Something implemented, laws passed that don't have to do with our health.
Right.
Okay. Well, we are about out of time. Guys, I just want to remind you that our body's so amazingly designed, so complex, so intricate, all the different microbes in our gut and all these enzymes and glutathione and all this great scientific stuff we've discovered. But remember, 200 years ago, none of our ancestors knew any of this stuff. They didn't know about the microbiome. They didn't know about glutathione. They didn't know about inflammation and germs and all this stuff that we've figured out. But 200 years ago, they were healthy. They didn't have Alzheimer's. Yeah. They didn't have cancer. They didn't have heart attacks. They didn't have all this disease. They were healthy.
Yeah.
So science is cool and good and all, and we've discovered lots of stuff. But then when man jumps in there and starts manipulating it and tinkering with it and doing things to it. We haven't even gotten into the vaccine, and we won't. This is going to be one show. We're not going to talk about that.
Yeah, but you know, Ben, I want to say something about modern science, although it's been prostituted to the food industry. What I really like is to show how modern science actually supports everything we're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah. We've lost our intuitive abilities to know what's healthy, which foods are healthy, but we have to come back through science. And we are, you know, we talk a lot about traditional foods, but unless what they did is supported by modern science, we are skeptical.
Right.
And we like to show the scientific validation of traditional food ways.
Yeah. And it's so awesome that y'all do. And that's why I recommend everybody go check out the websites, both wisetraditions.org. And that's where you can sign up for the conference and go attend that conference or live stream or buy the DVD recordings or however. I just highly recommend it because you'll get the science, the amazing scientists, yeah. And you'll get all the practical stuff too. And then check out westonaprice.org. That's where years and years, probably decades now, of information and articles.
We're 20 years. Yeah. Well, actually, we're 21 years now. And everything we've ever published is on the website.
Yeah. The other day I had to look up something real quick. I jumped on there. And the article was like from 2009, I think, but it was rich. It was full of great information. So y'all, whenever you have a question, go check out that website, westonaprice.org, wisetraditions.org. Everybody go to Allen, Texas in November. November what, Sally?
5th through 7th, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Okay. I encourage everybody to check that out and get there if you can. It'll be a great time and you'll get to be around like-minded people. So y'all go check that out. Sally, thank you for your work, your dedication, your years of commitment to these wise traditions and to educating the masses and to supporting the masses. I know it's probably been a journey and has some tough times in there too. So thank you for your commitment and all that.
Well, we've had a lot of fun.
Well, that's awesome. And y'all check out the book too, Contagion Myth. Lots of good information in there. And we will be back next week with another great show. Remember, veritasmedical.com is where you can check out the archive shows. Soon we'll be launching a wellness education support program that you can access our wellness navigators to get coached in how to do these things from a practical standpoint. So check out veritasmedical.com. We'll be back next week with another great show. Check out wisetraditions.org and westonapress.org. Sally Fallon, thanks for joining us. We'd love to have you back someday.
I'd love to come back, Ben. Thanks so much for having me.
Okay, you're very welcome, everybody. Y'all have a great week.